Hey everybody, hi there. Welcome to our pre-show, the show before the show. Hang on while I get my stream going here and I can listen to all of your comments and speak with you. All right, I got it loaded. So welcome to our pre-show, everyone, including our replay viewers. This is our show before the official show begins in a few moments. Stand by as we notify everybody that we're live. Now, if you're a furloughed federal employee, let us know where you work and how you've been getting by. We have a great show for you today. We have Bob Beckley, a national vice president with NEFI IAM, the National Federation of Federal Employees. He's going to tell us about the workers at the Forest Service. We also have lots going on today with lots of rallies that are going on. We also have some almost like a sit-in on Capitol Hill, but we'll update you on that later. It's 3 o'clock. Activate Live starts now.
Activate your voice.
Fight for your rights.
Speak up.
Speak out.
We're union and we're proud.
Go union.
Live from Maryland, this is Activate Live.
Welcome to Activate Live, our weekly show about the Machinists Union, organized labor, and working people. I'm Tanya Hutchins, coming to you live from our studio in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Here's what's been going on for the past few days. Good news out of our Midwest territory. IAM Local 2068 has reached an agreement with Silgan Containers in Rochelle, Illinois. The three-year deal ends a nearly six-week strike. Members received improvements in overall wage increases and the ability to maintain long-term disability premiums for 1 year. Well, last week we introduced you to furloughed federal worker and NEFI IAM member Jamie Rodney. This past week she has been telling her story nationwide. Last night she was on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and last Saturday she spoke at the National Women's March in Washington, D.C. Thank you, Jamie, for putting a face on the shutdown. Well, union members rallied outside Nat Stadium on January 17th, while senators met inside for a retreat. Machinists, including NEFI IAM members, joined AFGE members, steel workers, and CWA members, asking the Senate to bring the issue to the floor and call a vote. And today, right now, federal employees and their unions are occupying the Hart Senate office building on Capitol Hill to make their voices heard. The goal was to fill the building with people, I think they did that, and to continue to call for a vote and the end to the shutdown. First, there was a silent protest that you see here, and then civil disobedience. We'll bring you updates on this day of action on our social media channels and in an upcoming IMAIL newsletter. Well, by the end of today, Wednesday, January 23rd, it will mark day 33 of the partial federal government shutdown here in the United States, now the longest one on record. And the government has been keeping track for at least 40 years. One of the people who knows what a shutdown feels like firsthand is NEFI IAM National Vice President Bob Beckley. Thanks for joining us, Bob.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
It's Bob, fun. What were you originally hired to do for the Forest Service, so we can learn a little bit about your job?
When I started with the Forest Service, if you remember the show Lassie, Lassie is the reason I joined the Forest Service.
Wow.
I was originally from San Francisco, watched Lassie, Timmy's dad was a forest ranger, that's what I wanted to do. So I joined the Forest Service back in the mid-70s, and worked in recreation, in engineering, some timber, and a lot of time in fire. I spent a good part of my career as a first responder fighting forest fires, including as a smoke jumper, where we would parachute out of airplanes into remote country to suppress wildfires.
That
And after that, pardon me?
That sounds like a harrowing job.
Oh, it is. It's You do it for the adventure, and you stay for the camaraderie. It's a wonderful, exciting, I can't say, they're just words aren't can't express how wonderful and thrilling it is to be a smoke jumper for the Forest Service. Wow. Unfortunately, I got injured, and with that, I moved over to the Technology and Development Program, where we operate as troubleshooters for the agency. My forte, even though I work for technology and development, I'm the low-tech guy. My life is crosscut saws, axes, horses, mules, explosives. If it doesn't have a motor or a computer attached to it, it probably comes to my purview.
Well, Bob, we've had a lot going on this past month with the shutdown. What has it been like in your area?
So I'm in Montana, and we're in winter mode right now. But even though it's winter time, we still need to be looking ahead at next season's fire season. Wildfires can start any time now, and especially in California and other areas, we're looking at, right now we should be looking at hiring, making job offers to those seasonal firefighters who are going to come fight fire for us, and to start looking at training and training opportunities and getting those people up to speed when they do come on board. So having this furlough is kind of putting us in a bad way in terms of getting our crews ready for fire season. Go ahead, Tanya.
Yes, what are you hearing from non-federal workers? Are you getting support from the community?
Actually, we are. Just last night, I got a call from one of our county commissioners, and they're wondering what they can do to help furlough federal employees. And this morning I had a conversation with our disaster service folks in Missoula County, where I live, and they're looking at what can they do to help? What are the needs? What do we need to do to help our injured or our furloughed federal employees? Unfortunately, I didn't have a good answer to give them. Of course, I've been reaching out to our members and to other people trying to figure out the impacts to how is this affecting them? How is this hurting them, impacting their life? And maybe it's part of our Forest Service heritage where there's that little bit of stoic demeanor, or maybe it's because so many of us are first responders that we're usually the ones looking to help somebody. We're not on the receiving end that often. I had a conversation with somebody just recently asking them how they were doing, and their response was kind of moving to me. They said, my family, we're the ones that donate to the local food bank. We're the ones that write checks. We're the ones that bring food into the food bank. And now here I am looking at having to be a recipient, and that's very hard. I just can't do it. I don't know if it's a matter of pride or embarrassment, but the thought of having to go into the food bank after supporting the food bank for so many years, it is very difficult for them. And I see that throughout the rest of my community with our furloughed feds and the other people I know and work with. There's a certain measure of pride.
Do you find some federal workers are helping other federal workers if they're able?
Oh, you bet. This afternoon I'm going to meet a couple of my other furloughed Forest Service friends, and we actually refer to it as Furlough Beer Wednesday, where we meet at a local brewery just to have a beer and to touch base with each other and check in to make sure that we're all doing good, that we're all okay. We're a very tight group. I think another thing we... Go ahead.
No, you continue.
I think when you look at who we are as federal employees, especially with the Forest Service. I mean, it's kind of a dream job in many ways. And we look at this with a great measure of pride and honor. And we're kind of living the dream. And then all of a sudden, through no fault of our own, we've become political pawns. And they've taken something away from us. We're now non-critical. And for some of those employees that were looking at retiring the end of last year, or that did retire the end of last year, they didn't even get to finish out their career on the job. They were retired in furlough status. How demeaning is that after a 30-plus year career with an agency to, well, you're non-critical, you can do the rest of your time on furlough?
What is the official term called? Because I know that a lot of people in the media say non-essential, but everybody is essential to me.
Oh.
Is it critical? What is the official term?
No, you're right, Tanya. It's non-essential. I'm looking at it from a first responder callback, where they're critical positions, but officially it is essential.
Okay, because I was just wondering. I keep hearing terms.
Yep. No, you're right.
What do you personally want lawmakers and the president to know?
We want to go back to work. This is the time of year when we're preparing for next field season, when we're preparing for the next round of wildfires, for trail work, for the field crews to go out. This is the time. This is our planning time. If we don't get that work done now, we're going to be behind the gun when we finally get to go back to work. And we want to work. I mean, who wouldn't want to work for the Forest Service? It's fun. I've been with the Forest Service over 30 years. I've never considered it work. It's enjoyment. It's what I wanted to do ever since I was a little boy. I want to go back to work. My coworkers want to go back to work. We feel we're being punished. We're being political pawns.
How can fellow union members help? What can we do to help?
Write your senators. Write your representatives. Let's bring this furlough to an end so we can get back to work and represent and serve America. We talk about making America great again. America's always been great. The unions made America great. The unions make America great every day. We need to get back to work so we can continue doing the work we want to do.
We have a comment from Dave Lehive, who's saying solidarity to you, brother, from this District 141 member. So the comments are coming in already. We have Adriana Picasso saying, union brothers and sisters, help when is needed. If you need help this time, it's okay. Don't feel bad. The table will turn again. Solidarity. So you're getting support right now, right online. And keep the comments coming.
Great.
You talked earlier when we were discussing this interview about young people. How much of a difference is it when someone is young and just starting out on the job to have to go through something like this?
So the federal government touts itself as being the model employer. We should be who everybody wants to work for. And we should be recruiting and looking at getting the best of the best, the brightest of those younger people coming out of college, coming into the workforce. This doesn't send a very good message to them, especially in a tight job market where, wow, I can get furloughed through no fault of my own. I can get put on leave without pay status, and I don't know when I'm going to get my next check, and I don't know what to do. Not a good message for them. And for those employees that are in their younger years and are now working for us, I know many of them are hurting. They have mortgages. They have payments. They have young families. The bills keep coming in and the checks aren't. They need help. They're the ones that I feel most sorry for.
Here's another comment from Rosie's Machinists in District 751. They're saying, standing with you from Washington State, Brother Bob.
All right.
And we have Andrew Windwaker, solidarity from IM 751 here in Washington.
Yeah. That's good. That's what the union is.
Bob, is there
any?
Been union since, yeah, keep going. Keep going.
My family's been union since they got off the boat in San Francisco in the 1920s. And this is family. Union
have,
is good. Union's
family.
You
have to tell me. You have to tell me a little bit more about that, because I wanted to know what your union story is. Tell us just how long it's run through your family.
My grandparents escaped Russia at the outbreak of the Russian Revolution in 1917. They made it to China. They stayed in China for a few years and then eventually made it to San Francisco. That's where I was born and raised. My grandmother joined the Seamstress Union in the early 20s. My grandfather was also a union member. He died in the shipyards as a union member in Oakland, California during World War II. And my father, my sisters, my mom, we were all union members. My wife, when she was teaching, belonged to the teachers' union. And I've been a member of the National Federation of Employees for quite a while, since early part of my career. And it's been a wonderful journey.
Bob,
it's been a growth.
Bob, yeah. Here's another comment from Ko Vang, Solidarity from Machinist District 77. I also wanted to let you know, or to ask you, basically, while you were growing up, do you remember hearing your parents and grandparents talk about how important the union was and how it changed their lives?
Oh, absolutely. I remember my grandmother talking about how rough it was for her being in the seamstress union and the terrible working conditions they had to put up with. And although my grandfather died in the shipyards in Oakland and I never had a chance to meet him, my grandmother would talk about how hard it was and what a fight it was to be a union member in those early days. How the tactics that management would take against them and how hard they would make it, how repressive it was, and the dirty lowdown things they would do to disrupt the union and to disrupt the work to hurt people.
And some of those tactics, not all of them, but we just have different tactics that are in use today, so we're still fighting that fight.
Oh, we are. It's terrible. And I remember my dad would talk about his life with the union, and he wasn't into giving anybody a hand out, but he was all about giving somebody a hand up. It was about taking that person below them and helping them climb up, helping them move up the ladder, helping them get a better life, a better career, a better job, benefits, retirement, health care. That's what the union is. And it was terrible when the union started to lose membership, when the union started to be broken, and people turned against each other. Instead of wanting to have what union members have, they seem to rally against us. And it makes no sense. They vote against their own self-interest. They vote against what's best for them. We should be looking at helping each other up, not saying, well, you have something, you're a union member, you have benefits, you have rights, you have protection, you have a pension. I don't have that, so you shouldn't have it either. No, everybody should have it. That's what the union is. We need to help people get up, not tear each other down.
I totally agree with you. I'm gonna read every message of support that comes in, because we have another one from IAM Local 1776 saying, standing in solidarity with all federal workers, from the O.B. O'Brien Lodge. And we are so thankful for all of the people that are writing in. We do appreciate it, because it does mean a lot. It really does. And, you know, Bob is just one person that we're talking to today, and we're so thankful that he's taking the time to speak with us. But Bob, I'll let you speak directly to them. Like, Adriana's asking you, Bob, what a privilege, you know, to have been born in such a Union family. You know, did you feel that way, like it was a privilege?
No. No, it was normal. I didn't know anything else. It's something you were born and raised with. It's just something that was there. You didn't know it was anything special. You thought it was just like everybody else. And in that time frame, it was everybody else. It was a different time then.
Ryan Kelly is writing in. Ryan Kelly is writing in, from one civil servant to another, we both know there is rarely a thing called a non-essential employee in government work. That is so true. I think all employees are essential because, you know, we all work together. Talk about that a little bit, Bob. The fact that we need to work as a team and each federal employee is a part of something larger. Talk about that a little bit.
You need to be a team member. You need to be a team player. I'm going to revert back to my smoke jumping days or my firefighting days, where you put your life on line for America every time that siren goes off, every time you suit up and get in the airplane, every time you parachute to the ground and fight a wildfire. It's not just you. Your success is in everybody else on that airplane. Your family, your team, you have to be working together for the greatest good, to accomplish the goals that we're set out to do, to meet the Forest Service mission, to represent and serve America. The first chief of the Forest Service, Gifford Pinchaw, really had a call to arms for Forest Service employees. And he said, what our job is to provide the greatest good for the greatest number of people in whatever we're doing at that time. When you're fighting fire, when you're doing other jobs, you're providing that greatest good. And you do it as a team. I don't know what else there is. The union is a team. The union is family. When you're part of a fire crew, when you're part of a law enforcement team, it's the same thing. Your family, your union, it's life. I don't know anything else.
How often do you run into non-union families where you kind of have to explain where you came from?
Oh, gosh, all the time.
Do they get it?
No. You know, as a federal sector union, we need to represent people, whether they're dues-paying members or not. And it's amazing how many people that I have helped over the years that they want the benefits that the union can help and provide them with. And at the end, they don't want to join. And it baffles me. I just don't understand that. As I mentioned earlier, when I was a smoke jumper, I didn't walk away from my last jump. I landed in a tree. Tree landings are actually fairly common for smoke jumpers because, of course, we're parachuting into the forest. Well, I landed in a tree. The tree broke. I fell 80 feet, broke my back in 5 places. And when I recovered enough to return to work, I found that there really wasn't any help for injured federal employees. My agency didn't really understand or want to work with injured federal employees. They didn't understand the federal workers' compensation system. The work that, you know, if you're damaged goods, they just kind of want to brush you aside. So that was really my move into a leadership position with the union, is learning the federal workers' compensation system so that I can help other injured federal employees. And I have, over the years, I'm sure I've talked to thousands of employees that have questions or problems with federal workers' compensation, and I know I've helped many, many hundreds within the Forest Service get the benefits they need and the help they need to get their lives back on track and back into meaningful work.
Well, we are so thankful for your work all of these years and for taking the time out today to tell us your story and what's going on in your community.
Thank you, Tanya. This has been a pleasure.
Well, keep in touch. Let us know how you're doing. Hopefully this will come to an end soon. I'm going to ask our viewers when they think it will end. Do you have any feeling or prediction about how things are going?
I don't. I've been through several of these, and I have to admit, when we first got furloughed the end of December, I thought, well, I'm going to get a few days off. That's great. Well, a few days turned into a week, 2 weeks, a month. It's gotten old, and I've never run into anything like this. I don't have a clue.
Well, I think 33 days is enough, so I'm hoping it ends soon for all of our sakes.
I hope so.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Tanya.
So what do you think? Comment now to activate your voice about furloughed federal workers during the partial U.S. government shutdown. When do you think it's going to end? And how have you been getting by if you are a furloughed worker? Share your stories in the comments section below this video. Well, workers all across the United States have been making statements about being furloughed, about not getting paychecks, and workers' rights in general. Here's a look at how the AFL-CIO commemorated Martin Luther King Jr. Day with its Civil and Human Rights Conference. This is our IAM delegation here in Washington, D.C. And that conference included a day supporting the National Women's March.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. It's good to see all your faces here for Martin Luther King Conference of 2019.
The theme of this conference is the fierce. The fierce urgency of now. You know, Dr. King spoke those words over 50 years ago, and yet we know that his call to action is just as important today as it was when he first made it.
1 year before he was killed, Dr. King issued a warning that in this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. This is no time for apathy and complacency. This is a time for vigorous and positive action.
We can't rely on others to do our work. We must be the ones on the streets. We must be the ones in the halls of power making change that helps working people.
It was an honor to be here. Like my sign says, together we rise. I believe in that. Together we rise as women. We bring each other up. This being the weekend of Martin Luther King's birthday, and I don't think any of us should be silent as women. We have the rights to vote, and we have the rights and the power to make a difference, and that's why I'm here.
Just like the struggle for human rights, women have fought those same struggles for hundreds of years for rights, equal rate, pay, equal everything. And so I think it's wonderful that we can join forces to celebrate and honor these women for their great sacrifices and contributions.
I think that the Women's March is very much what I wanted to be part of. And it's a great success for all the women to be here and rise up.
And they're also writing letters to our veterans. So just encourage them, let them know that, you know, we're praying for them, we're here for them, and we have not forgotten them.
Remind America of the fierce urgency of now.
IAM District 751 in Washington State marked the 37th annual Martin Luther King Day with a march and rally in our Western Territory. Members were out in force marching for jobs, education, and contracts. They also attended workshops, and there is John Holden there from 751. Well, here's a look at our calendar of events for the coming weeks. Classes at the William W. Wimpasinger Education and Technology Center are up and running again, so registrations are due soon for these three classes. Veterans Services due February 4th, Social Media for Organizers is due February 11th, and EAP2 is due February 11th as well. For more information, visit the website wimpasinger.iamaw.org, and you spell Wimpasinger. State councils of machinists are busy at work throughout North America. Here are the upcoming meetings that are available. February 2nd and 3rd, the Iowa State Council meets in Des Moines. February 11th, the Georgia State Council meets in Atlanta. And February 20th through the 23rd, the New Mexico Council meets in Santa Fe. And you still have time to register for the IAM's Women's Conference in April. That's April 2nd to the 6th at Bally's Hotel in Las Vegas. The theme is Women Rising, Unite the Fight. There is also a t-shirt contest that's open until February 1st, so you still have a week or two if you're an artist. And this is the website to go to, IAM4Me, IAM4.me/19-WC-T-shirt. And you can check the comments for the link as well. But if you go to our website, there's also information there on goiam.org. And the Transportation Conference is the week after the Women's Conference. That's April 8th to the 11th in Las Vegas. The Legislative Conference is coming up May 6th to the 8th in Washington, D.C. And the Communications Conference, which is run by our Communications Department here at headquarters, is June 4th through the 6th at Planet Hollywood in Las Vegas. That's where we teach you how to activate your voice. That's where voice activation comes from. So you got all that? Did you get all the dates? Every show we try to end that. And you can also enter our 2019 IAM photo contest. The deadline for that is April 1st, so you have some time for this one to get some good pictures in. You go to goiam.org to download the entry form. The winning photos will be in our calendar, and $2 from each calendar goes to support Guide Dogs of America, which is our favorite charity. They raise guide dogs from puppies, train them, and then anyone in North America, you can come to the Guide Dogs of America Center in California and be trained and paired with a guide dog, and it's a wonderful cause. So enter those photos, your favorite photos of IAM members on the job or doing community service, and you can get all the rules on our website, goiam.org. So we hope we've gotten some great photos in the past. We're hoping to get some more. So get those entries in and spread the word to everyone in your local. Well, next Wednesday, we are going to introduce you to our Transportation Territories CIRT team. If you haven't heard of CIRT, that's C-I-I-R-T. It stands for Critical Incident Response Training. Members help members cope with the effects of a traumatic event or a critical incident, and this team does some great work. They've had classes down at the Wimpasinger Center, and it is really something to see. They're good at what they do, so we look forward to that. That is it for this episode of Activate Live. Don't forget to activate your voice in your community and in your local.